On our very special New Year's edition of the Kick to Kick podcast, we head straight into the mailroom. Then we will check out our question of the day, which involves our New Year's resolutions for our show. We'll give you some quick history from 1902, followed by a rundown of the season 1902. And finally, guess what, guys? There's another final system format the league has adopted. We'll tell you all about it after the song.
It's the history of football we knows about, and we want to expand what we know. We'll become such intelligent gentry with every Kick to Kick show. Beginning in the time 1870, right through to the modern day. Tune in for Timmy Coops and the Kazman to hear what they all have to say.
Yes, and welcome to the Kick to Kick podcast for this new year of 2018. My name is Tim. To my right...
Oh, he's gone back.
Oops. Mix it up. Hi, I'm Kaz.
And over here we've got someone called Kaz. This is, I guess, last one we focused on what kind of the Christmas thing, because we meant to do a Christmas show but didn't end up doing a Christmas show. So this is our New Year's show.
Yes.
So Happy New Year, everybody.
Happy New Year.
Even though it's our second one for the year. Welcome back to the show. Welcome, first-time listeners. If you haven't listened before, I recommend going back and listening to the other episodes.
Great New Year's resolution. Yeah. Listen to all the episodes.
It'll make more sense if you do that. It'll make much more sense. But you can just jump right in on the 1902 season, which is what we are doing today. So we are here in the Kick Cave recording a new show. So firstly, we'll get to our question of the day. As you know, we'll go to the mailroom.
Yay!
Right. Mailboy.
Mailboy, all
Jimmy.
Right. We have. Dear all Kick to Kickers, good to hear that you are back for 2018. I'm enjoying listening to you live in the Kick Cave. I was just wondering how you get all your information for this show. Yours sincerely, George from Windsor.
Well George,
that's a good question.
It is a very good question. I think we all have different systems to get our information. A lot of scouring books and just checking on the internet for a lot of us. I think, I mean, Timmy is the main, you know, information gatherer.
Yes.
There are many books.
I like to op shop.
Yes.
So we've all got a copy of the same four books.
Which is amazing.
Thank you, Tim.
We've got a great book called Every Game Ever Played. With all the VFL AFL results from 1897 to 91, so we're going to have to update probably in 2020 when we get to 91.
Yeah.
Another one we have is the Encyclopedia of AFL Footballers, every AFL VFL player since 1897 as well. And those are sort of the real almanacs.
Yeah.
But there's also a couple of fantastic ones, which... The 100 Years of Australian Football, the complete story of the AFL.
If you haven't got that one, that's a great, good little resource, that one.
It's amazing.
Pictures and results. And
old newspaper articles and fantastic things like that. Mm. And another one is called The Clubs, which is the complete history of every club in the VFL AFL. And these are sort of the more general ones, but then we have a few based on each of the clubs as well and those sorts of things, which are a bit more specific, but these are amazing.
Those four are probably the main four. I'm an op shopper, so every time I see these in an op shop, I just pick up another copy for these guys so that we've all got the same books and we're all getting the information.
They are absolutely unbelievable. But there's an amazing amount of stuff, obviously, on the internet. It's an amazing resource if no one's ever used it before.
Yeah. www.theinternet.com.
It's going to catch on, yeah. I think. Yeah, you find that on the World Wide Web. HTTP.
Any particular websites you use?
There's a great one called AFL Tables, which...
All the stats.
Oh, actually,
which has all the
that.
Stats.
Nice.
For the years that we're talking about, the stats are basically how many games the players played for the season and how many goals they kicked.
Yeah.
But as we get further along, there's a lot more information on there, which is phenomenal. And just a lot of just delving.
Yeah.
Really. Mm. Just Googling and then going through things.
The
and
old Argus.
The old Argus.
Trove.com?
There's some phenomenal stuff. And it's just about sort of sifting through the things that other people make up, I think, is part of the problem.
Mostly books at this stage, because that's where all the information seems to be.
Yeah.
I use a great website called australianfootball.com.au, which is a good one with lots of, again, stats. That's where I get all the grand final reports from as well that we use for the grand final speech. Again, it has all the goal kickers.
Well, interestingly, Tim, you provided me with this book called Blood in Their Boots. It's a bit graphic, but it's about umpires.
Yeah.
And had some fantastic information about, obviously, each umpire in order of which grand final they've done. So the first umpire listed here, a number each, umpire number one, who umpired the first grand final in 1897, and then it goes on after that. So we've got Ivo Krapp here, who does quite a lot of games.
Of course he does.
Yeah. And anyway, so he's umpire number one, and there's more to come.
Nice.
Please don't worry yourselves with all this fancy book learning. Let us do the work for you.
We'll
sift through it and give you a fantastic clip of what we all the crap that we found out.
My desk at home is covered in football books at the moment.
Yeah, unbelievable.
I've got other ones like the best grand final players when it matters most. I've got
this one
I found from the Camberwell Market, the Courage Book of VFL Finals by
amazing
from 1897 to 1973.
Ah, where's the little one you had, which was like a guide to Australian football or something like that? Yeah.
Somewhere.
It's in there somewhere. Like a little pocket-sized one, perfect for clarifying.
Australian Football Handbook.
Amazing, just to have in your front pocket, just in case.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's like all
this
the
booklet
rules.
Contains the fundamentals of how to play our most exciting national game, how to kick, mark, spoil, turn, shepherd and tackle, with coaching hints and exercises to improve your play. I reckon they should still hand this out at the game.
Absolutely.
So, you know, when you take someone from another country to the football, and you just spend the whole time explaining what's going on, and you can't really do it because nothing makes sense.
Yeah.
Just give them this book and watch the game.
Yeah.
It'll be perfect.
Nice. Maybe I'll have to go through that in a bit more detail because there's some ridiculous things in there.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure it's probably changed a bit.
Yep.
Yeah. So I've used Wikipedia.
Oh, yeah, Wikipedia. Yeah. I use it too. That's where I get all the results. So we put all the results into one page so we can kind of look at them easily.
Yeah.
I get all that from Wikipedia, though. They've got a comprehensive coverage.
They do, yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, fantastic question.
Mm. All right, and we have one other question here. I'm just going to hand over to Charlie.
Oh, okay.
Mm. Ooh.
Here we go. Thank you, Jimmy.
Thank you, Jimmy.
What's the question?
The question is, it just says, "Dear all, I hear that Charlie is a good singer and was wondering if he could give us a rendition of the Melbourne Grammar football song."
Oh.
Thanks, Anonymous. Thank you, Anonymous. I would love to. I can't
question
remember.
Question without notice?
Question without notice. I actually can't remember the lyrics, so let's see if Wikipedia can help me with that.
Right, and while you're doing that...
I think definitely that sounds like something in the future we're going to be treated to.
Yeah, Anonymous was me as well.
Oh, was it?
I thought it was legitimate.
I'm unbelievably surprised.
I thought it was the most legitimate.
Surprise! I've heard you sing it before.
And but that is not to say you can't sing. He's a fantastic singer.
He is a good singer.
You can sing just about anything. It'd have to be that one.
Alright. So Kaz, you just vamp while Charlie looks this up. You found it.
Oh,
are you going for it?
I will find it. If I can't find it now, I promise to sing it on the next episode, because I know... Well, I've actually got it printed on my wall at home. No, not really, but I will be able to find it.
Of course.
I had it in one of my books.
Yes.
Songs I learnt in high school, we had a house singing competition and we had to learn My Heart Will Go On, but we tried to do it as a punk version.
Oh, yeah.
We lost that house singing, but it was fun thinking of that.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking...
Whose choice was that?
I think it was a committee.
Oh, okay. Yeah, and I thought it would be cool.
Yeah, we had nothing else to go with.
Yeah, okay.
I think I remember.
All right, I found it.
All right.
Now.
Here we go. Listen.
This was originally written a long time ago, I think. When was this actually written?
It still makes sense, though.
Wasn't it back in the day? Like 18?
It was. It was the original games song it was. So it's, it doesn't instill fear in the hearts of opposition. But, I mean, it should because, it's a beautiful song.
All right,
ready?
We'll give him a big clap. Come on, Charlie. Let's give it up.
Okay. Play together, dark blue 20, long and little marks in plenty. Get your kick, let none prevent ye, make the leather roll. Mark your men, keen effort straining on the ball, and show your training. Still, though short the time remaining, get another goal. And there you go.
Fantastic.
Nice.
That's the first verse. I think they're about six, but I won't, you know, keep on going.
Maybe one episode, a verse per episode.
Absolutely.
Then we can have the Best of Charlie episode where we just put them all together.
Absolutely.
And no one will get that one.
No. You're in fine voice there.
There you go,
as
Anonymous.
Well,
there's your song.
Yeah.
Good question, by the way. All right, our question for the day, so speaking of questions, was what our New Year's resolution is for our show this year. And maybe I'll start.
Because please.
I'm relieved.
I've actually got two ideas.
Can I please have one?
No. One of them is after... So when Sandy was on last year on one of those shows, the 1900 episode, we gave her a old football record as a gift. Mm. And so I've dug through all my stuff for other gifts we can give people who are on the show. Mm. So whether that's good stuff or not, maybe we could have... This is just brainstorming at the moment. We could give them the gift, or we could say you could spin this wheel and receive something else.
Ah, yeah, like a mystery prize.
Mystery prize. So things like some football cards, old records. I've got a VHS of Biff Bumps and Brawlers.
Oh, one of the finest VHSs ever made.
I've got some old posters here. I've got an autograph. I don't know if I want to give my autograph.
I really like... I like the idea of a spin the wheel, because it turns it to a podcast / game show. Yeah. I really like that idea.
The other idea is wonderful. I feel like we should have some kind of kick-to-kick Hall of Fame that we establish as well.
Yes, like Dick Condon's right up there at the
Dick
moment.
Dick Condon hopefully. And Ivo Crapp would probably be the two founding
that
inductees.
Really stick out. I mean,
we've been crapping from our last
from our last episode, I think Firth McCallum's got to be up there for walking 47 kilometres to a game.
So we'll have to have a think of some kind of criteria.
Yeah. Yes. Just legendary weird stuff.
That's right. They select themselves, don't they?
Yeah, I like that idea of a Hall of Fame. We could even have a Hall of Shame as well.
Yeah,
really. I've got one for Hall of Shame this week, possibly.
Oh, fantastic.
This episode.
Good. Well, either of you guys want to have your share your resolutions?
Yeah. I can't help thinking that it's something that I need to do more to do with football, but it's something to do with the show, right? So I just obviously really want to stop saying, I'll edit that out. It's not a joke anymore. It's become something that is a problem.
It's a catchphrase, though, Kaz.
Yeah. I like it. Well, I think I like it too. I really enjoy it.
Use sparingly. Okay. So we start with
Maybe we can get a special bell to ring when he says it.
Yeah, that'd be perfect. Yeah. Or just keep like a tally up somewhere.
Yeah.
It'd be amazing.
Oops.
I think for resolution for me and for the show, I would really like to find a way, like we were just saying about, you know, what we use to research for these, for ourselves, for these episodes, love to find a way of getting more information in these early years so I can have get a bit more of a sense of what it was like to actually be at the games and things. And I think those articles are a great insight, and the way they're written is just fantastic. But obviously we can't talk
weave
to anyone who was there, but to get some of those sorts of insights would be absolutely amazing. I'd love that.
Nice.
Well, that's going to happen. I think.
Well,
that's
as time goes on and we sort of tweak things, you know.
It will get easier as well as time goes on.
Yeah.
All right. Moving on.
Give us some history.
Excellent. All right. History 1902. What have we got, guys?
What a year it was.
Hey, much more than last time.
So, obviously, last year, 1901, was the first year of Federation. So, we've passed that one. But 1902, another sports thing. On the 1st of January, the first college football bowl game, the Rose Bowl, between Michigan and Stanford, was held in Pasadena. So, good for them to finally getting their act together.
That's right. Elegantly named.
Yes, the Rose Bowl. It's, a good one. On Feb 27th, the Australian officers Breaker Morant and Peter Hancock were executed for the murder of Boer prisoners of war near Louis Trichardt. Yeah, so the movie Breaker Morant was obviously made after that story.
Don't know.
Significant, eh?
And another sports one, Real Madrid FC was founded as the Madrid Football Club. So they finally got there. Good on them.
Got anything?
Yeah, I've got... yes, the Boer War ends. And after that, we've got the the Second Boer War. And after that, we've got the introduction of The Hague and the Geneva Convention. So some around the world there, some things changing. But I've got a couple of Bournes, but maybe I can come back to them.
I've got a few more other events.
Nice.
Denmark sells the Virgin Islands to the USA.
Bargain.
In China, the Empress forbids foot binding.
Oh.
Oh.
Dr. Harvey Cushing does the first brain operation.
Wow.
The movie A Trip to the Moon was released.
Now, that's the first movie.
One of the first movies. Yeah, French maker. You know, you probably have seen the thing of the guy with the giant moon face and the thing crashes into his eye.
Yeah, it's that up there, the picture of that up there. But the episode comes out on the podcast, but... Yes.
I can see, like, really small above that guitar.
Yes. I love that picture.
Yes. That was good podcasting.
It was. You got any more events?
I've got a few more. A new car speed record was set in Nice in France of 74 miles per hour, or 119 kilometres per hour. In May, Cuba gained independence from the United States.
From Spain, actually.
Oh, I had from the US. There you go.
From Spain.
In July, Lord Salisbury retired as the British Prime Minister, and later, or early the next month, Edward VII, though his mother had died the year before, he was actually crowned King of the United Kingdom on August the 9th. And in a little bit of history that sort of leads on to something that happens in about a decade's time, the Order of the Garter was conferred on Archduke Franz Ferdinand of Austria in 1902 as well.
I've got some local stuff. So women, we get the right to vote and stand for election in Australia.
Yes, Australian Parliament agrees to suffrage.
Yeah, you were going to say it. And sticking to Australia, we've got 100 miners die in a pit explosion in Wollongong. So that's fairly significant.
I also had teddy bears were given their name by toy maker Morris Mitchum. Teddy Roosevelt, they were named after.
Yes, the first teddy bear produced,
Some births?
Yeah, Albert Narumjira.
Yeah.
Good man.
Painted the Ghostly Gums.
Yes, and he goes on to win Archibald in 1956, but he was born this year.
Yep.
Charles Lindbergh was also born in 1902. The aviator, probably more famous for the fact that his child was kidnapped, I guess, at this stage. John Steinbeck was the American writer who wrote Of Mice and Men was born also.
Ah.
And Ann Nixon Cooper, who was an African-American civil rights activist, was born in 1902 also.
Ah. Alan Marshall, an Australian, wrote I Can Jump Puddle. So he got polio and it affected him his whole life. So that's an autobiography.
Oh, that's his book.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay, all right, let's get stuck into the season of 1902, the VFL season.
Because it's football season, and that's the reason it's the time of the year that we love.
So very early on in April, on April 25th, actually, before Anzac Day now, but then it wouldn't have been Anzac Day, they held a grand football smoke night, Kaz.
Yes.
Where they shared stories and songs and recreations and talked about the good old days.
And celebrating the times that are, which are magnificent at the moment.
Yeah.
I could go on to say. You want me to say something more about it?
Oh, I want to tell you a little bit
more, yeah. Sure. Basically, they are celebrating... you know, the national game as well, that old England had, they had their national codes, and that maybe Australia could really get behind as way of, support from Parliament, celebrate the new virgin, national code, which is this one, football.
Yeah, there's a quote about that night saying, "I think the day will come when members of Parliament will find it in their interest and in the interest of their country to show a little more interest in the national sports."
How many times can you say interest in one sentence?
Yeah. Isn't that interesting?
It is,
yeah.
But they do, though. They always have their little side bets, and the loser state has to wear the winning state's jumper if it's an interstate grand final.
You watch them sometimes, especially members of parliament who go to games, and you think you don't actually know what anything that's going on, do you? Yeah, which is.
Didn't Malcolm Turnbull call Sydney the Roosters at one stage?
Probably.
We had one just yesterday talking about certain people who've recently moved here. And gangs.
Okay. Some other things that happened at the start of the 1902 season was the league had to make sure and ensure that games were starting on time, because quite a lot of them were starting late.
Ooh.
And they changed half time to 20 minutes. To 10 minutes. Not 20 or so minutes like it had been. So they really were strict on that. And as I said before, there's another new final system. So the third in 3 years. Mm. But maybe should we talk about that now or later?
Well, I just wanted to go back to something that we talked about in the last episode, because the name of the new system that was brought in 1901 was the Argus system. And we asked the question,
why?
Why? And I did a bit of research after the show and found out something. And now, it's not 100%. There's a bit of conjecture in it, but as far as I can tell, the person who created the Argus system was a man named Reginald William Ernest Wilmot, who was a leading sports journalist in Melbourne and wrote for the Argus. And I believe it says that he was well known for his writing on cricket and Australian rules football, and came up with the system in working with a few other people as well. Also, something interesting about him, he was believed to have coined the term bodyline during the 32 and 33 Ashes cricket test series. So he was known for a few different things.
Wouldn't it be an outrage now if a journalist influenced the way the finals is run or something like that?
I know, yeah. Unbelievable. But there's so much conjecture about, you know, the different... I mean, even you look at... the all Australians and stuff that have journalists sitting on the panel, and everyone's like, "Oh,
don't know what they're talking about." They
and it's not even a real thing; like, it's just a made up.
Yeah.
Mm. But so that was something interesting that there's been a few questions that have popped up in previous shows where I don't think we've actually followed up on them, but that was one that I thought was pretty interesting.
Very nice.
Is it called? So this one is the amended Argus system.
So I believe he was still part of it.
So we might talk about that just when we get to finals.
Yes. Yeah.
Mm. So we get stuck into the season itself, finishing eighth.
Who was it?
Well, it's St Kilda.
Now, did they better their score though? Did they win another game?
Actually, they go worse.
Oh no!
So if they won one game in 1901, to go worse means they won
no games. Their best game. I couldn't find a lot about them. Their best game was in round 5 against Collingwood. They held them scoreless in the first quarter, and eventually only lost by 7 points. So Collingwood being quite the dominant team at that stage. So that was in round 5. At St Kilda's home ground at Junction Oval. Charlie Baker, was someone going to talk about?
Yes, I was going to talk about Charlie Baker. So Charlie Baker was the leading goal kicker for St Kilda. He played all the games that St Kilda played, 17, and kicked 30 goals. Now, you know, that's pretty good. That would have almost won him the goal kicking the previous season.
It led the home and away season in
goal kicking. So he got that.
Mm.
The more interesting fact about it is the guy that came second, Mal Merkley, kicked 6 goals.
Yeah.
And then there was 4 and 3 and 2 and 1. So of the entire amount of goals that St Kilda kicked for the year, which was
64,
he kicked 30 of them, or 47%.
Which I believe is a league record.
It is still a league record. Yes, so he was recruited from St Pat's College in Ballarat and played 76 games for St Kilda from 1902. So 1902 was his first year.
And that's impressive,
30
isn't it?
Goals into 1906. In his very first game of VFL ever, he kicked 4 goals, which was at the time a club record, and I think stood for about 20 years after he retired.
I feel like, so this has happened a few seasons now where first-year players have kicked bags of goals. I don't think they're. I don't think they're coming in as 18-year-olds though. I think they're coming in as having played in the country and played in successful good leagues. Yeah,
yeah.
So they're not like they're being blooded.
Yeah,
yeah. They've played the game before.
The young guys. He was also, well, obviously a fantastic sportsman, but he also represented Victorian cricket while he was playing from 1903 to 1905. So he was playing for St Kilda and Victoria. And in 1906, an injury, unfortunately, ended his career.
Now, St Kilda's season, they won their sixth straight wooden spoon, which is a record they still hold.
Mm-hmm. They also hold another record in that year.
They were 7 games behind the team above them.
Yes.
We'll talk about it in a minute. Which is also a record. They're that far in last position.
Which is unbelievable.
It is. So they finished 8th for the season, 6th season in a row. 0 wins, 17 losses, but a better percentage. 41.88%.
So they're getting there. They're getting there.
They are.
They're figuring it out, slowly but surely.
All right, finishing 7th is not Carlton.
Unbelievable.
It is Geelong.
No.
So the team that just couldn't get it done in finals now just can't get it done.
That's the first time since the league started that they've missed finals. They finished 7th.
They're not in a good way.
Yes.
They are absolutely not in a good way. Now, don't believe their team changed all that much between 1901 and 1902 either.
No, but if you look at 5th, 6th and 7th all finished on the same wins and losses, it was just percentage that separated them. So that's why they seem like they've fallen a long way, but they haven't really.
No.
So their best win came in round 9 against Essendon, and they held the Bombers to 2 goals, who were the reigning premiers, and they won that game by 19 points. Also interesting to note that one of their champion players, Peter Burns, retired at the end of this season after 20 years playing with the club, and he would spend a further 30 years as their timekeeper.
Unbelievable. These people who just are so entrenched in their football clubs. It's still going on today, but it's just fantastic to see that it was, you know, beginning then. And you can see going from how many games certain players played, those guys that we were used to hearing about, you know, your Firth McCallums, like we talked about in the last episode, is only playing 4 games this season, and I think he played about 10 the season before. So even in these early days of the VFL, already, you know, those original players are starting to fall off the way, like starting to retire or just get a bit older, and that new group is coming through.
All right.
I think we've had a few players get to their first 100 games. And they've been some of the winning sides as well.
Yeah.
So a bit of experience there and just hitting the straps at the right time.
Yeah, absolutely right. So Geelong finished 7th, 7 wins, 10 losses, percentage of 76.81%. Interesting to note, they also lost all 3 of their sectional games after round 14. Gets us to 6th place, where Carlton finished. So that was their first time they hadn't finished second last. They finished 6th, Kaz.
That's right.
There you go. So they're not just kicking St Kilda into the ground anymore. It's Geelong as well.
It's a big year for them because they've got some changes in the club.
The biggest one being?
Being that they have a coach now?
Yeah, they accepted John Jack Worrell, who was a Fitzroy champion. He was twice champion of the colony in the early 1890s. He was appointed as secretary of the club and given full control over training, selection, recruiting, and everything. But so basically, he was the first coach.
Making him pretty much that title there.
The first coach who didn't also play.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, because he was a retired player.
Amazing.
So the VFL's first official coach. There's a bit of information here about him. Should we go into that?
I can go in a little bit.
Carlton's win over Essendon today marks the progress the team have made under new secretary and coach John Jack Worrell.
So that was round 12.
Yeah, so skipping ahead a bit where we're up to. But Worrell has instilled a new discipline and cohesion into Carlton's play,
which was definitely needed.
Yeah, I think I made a note about him saying that he encouraged long kicks and short passes in trouble.
Nice.
He was it also says that he was a very strict disciplinarian and said, "Boys, Booze and football don't mix. Players who prefer beer to eucalyptus will be struck off the list.
Yeah. But
what was the eucalyptus?
Eucalyptus oil?
Just something innocuous.
Yeah. But that kind of dedication and strictness got results in the end.
It's not long until they... Yeah, that's right. They start going good.
Yeah, so they had a pretty poor start to the season still. So they lost by 38 points to Geelong in round one. And in round two, they didn't score a goal. They scored 8 points and they lost to South Melbourne. So they started off quite poorly, but actually got better and better. In round six, they lost to Fitzroy, but the incident that occurred there was some well-dressed fans kicked the umpire after the game.
As long as they were well-dressed. that's all you need.
So does that mean the wealthier or the more privileged Carlton supporters?
I was going to say, but they thrashed Fitzroy that day.
No, Fitzroy thrashed them.
No, so thrashing by, excuse me. Yeah. Can I edit that out?
Yes!
He did it.
Maybe 2019 over the year.
I was reading this and I flipped up and I didn't read it properly.
Their best win was in round eight. They won against Geelong. It really seemed to turn the tide. So it was a 4-point win over Geelong in Corio. And from then on, they actually won more of the games towards the end of the season. And they're actually still in the running for the top four coming into the last sectional game. Mm-hmm. But due to results, missed out. So a very big turnaround for Carlton, who finished sixth, 7 wins, 10 losses, a percentage of 77.14. Which moves us on to South Melbourne.
I could not guess much on South Melbourne.
No, I kind of had to grab at stats here and look at the results that I could really see. So they had some close losses all season. So they lost by 6, 3, 1, 7 and 10 points. So that's 5 games by 10 points or less, which really affected their season in the end. Round 8 versus Collingwood, they only scored 1 goal in the first quarter. In the next game, in round 9, they scored 2 goals in the third quarter. So that's 3 goals in 8 quarters of football. So that 2-game stretch was absolutely shocking, if you look at those results.
Yeah.
And their best win came in the third week of the sectional finals. They had a 4-point win over Fitzroy. It was a tight game, and think about it, they couldn't make finals, so they really had nothing to play for.
No, and Fitzroy were obviously a much more capable team.
Yeah, and they were bound for finals.
Absolutely.
So it was a big win.
They did really well.
A good way to end the season for the old bloodstained Angels.
Yeah, bloodstained Angels. They were very bloodstained by the end of this year, I think.
Yeah. So South finishing fifth, 7 wins, 10 losses.
They didn't have a great year. Not a lot of spread with their goal kickers either. The leading goal kicker was Charlie Godding with 19 goals, and then after that, the next closest was Albie Rose with 9, and a couple had 9, but they just didn't have anyone up front apart from Godding to go to.
Yeah. So not the best of seasons for South. After, I think they made the 1899 grand final, was it? The late 1890s, they made the grand final.
Yeah.
And lost by a point to Fitzroy. They've kind of gone downhill. It seems like they just can't get a consistent season together. Now, usually at this point, after we've gone through half the teams, we talk about the State of Origin or the Intercolonial match, but I couldn't find any evidence of it.
No, neither. I was unable to find, anything that it went on. Maybe there was... I don't know why.
Right. But we'll get to the Red Legs then.
Yeah, no clues there.
Red Legs. Again, I couldn't find a lot of information about your team, guys. They had back-to-back one-point games. So in round 6, they lost to Geelong by a point. But in round 7 was their best win for the game, which was a 1-point win over South, coming from 16 points down at three-quarter time to beat South by a point. That was really... apart from the semi-final where they played Essendon, I know their 3 best players were missing for that game. And they lost that.
Yep.
But that's really the only other information I could find about the Fuchsias or the Red
Legs. There wasn't too much... it wasn't too many great things for them going on that in 1902 either. I mean, since they won in 1900, they seem to have really just fallen off. I mean, I think they really got over the line in 1900 because they strung a few games together where, at the right time of year. They finished sixth anyway, and they sort of continue finishing in that middle of the pack, fourth, fifth, sixth.
Yeah.
their leading goal kicker for the year was Jack Leith, and then Tommy with 26, and Tommy Ryan was just behind that with 20.
Yeah.
So they had a couple of people kicking goals, but just not enough to sort of really amp it up and get us up there.
All right, then let's move on to Fitzroy, who finished third. So they won their first seven games. They beat every other team in the first 7 weeks.
Mm, that would have been feeling pretty good.
Yep. And their first round win against Essendon, which was a 13-point win, was against the reigning Premier Essendon. It was a little bit of revenge on the previous season's 1-point loss.
So. Mm. Yeah, they would have been feeling that, especially after it came out and they realised that they did hit the post and they should have been in the grand final. It would have been a lot of feeling on the ground.
They would have pumped themselves up all off season for that game.
Absolutely.
Mm. Their best game, bar the semi-final, was round three, where they played South and came from 20 points down at three-quarter time. They kicked 4 goals, 3 in the last quarter to 1 point and won by 6 points.
Mm. And similarly, I couldn't find much about this particular season for them.
No.
Plenty about some other teams.
Yeah, so Fitzroy finished third, 10 wins, 7 losses, 125.9%. Which moves us to Essendon, finished second. So round six, they had a rare win over Collingwood at Victoria Park, which didn't seem to happen very often. Albert Thurgood, interesting article about him from 1902.
Yes.
Do you want to enlighten us, Coops?
Well, it was I'm assuming we're talking about the same one on June 16th.
Where he was...
The Essendon Football Club have protested that their champion, Albert Thurgood, has been wrongfully suspended for striking St Kilda's Alf Trevelyan in the match which Essendon won 10-4-64 to 6-4-40. According to the club, the central umpire, Mr Franks, said that he did not see an incident and heard no complaint until after the game. Thurgood has signed an affidavit declaring his innocence. Meanwhile, a dark-haired, elderly recruit named Goodthur lined up for Essendon on Saturday.
who wasn't Albert Thurgood, apparently.
No.
That, I love that, though. I love that the club's obviously gone, oh, screw them. We're going to mess around with it.
Yeah, and have some fun. Ridiculous.
Goodthur. He was the first Essendon player to be suspended as well. Took 6 seasons.
I guess, you know, without Dick to worry about.
Well, he was in Collingwood, so...
No, I know, but, you know, all of his focus was
for someone else.
Yeah, exactly.
I've read somewhere that he was accused of laying down.
Well, that happens at the end of the season.
Okay, so...
So we might talk about that at the end of... after the grand final.
Yes.
And it was Essendon in round eight who finally stopped Fitzroy's unbeaten run of 7 in a row without Thurgood. So that was the first week Thurgood was missing, and they beat the top team at that time.
Oh.
I think Goodthur kicked a few goals, though.
Is Goodthur in the book there, the Encyclopedia of AFL?
Let me check.
Got a note about that. One game.
Yeah. No, so Albert Thurgood, this was his last real season. He has recently been inducted into the Brighton Grammar Hall of Fame as well because he was a Brighton Grammar student.
Yeah, I've got that he was also in Team of the Century.
Essendon. Yeah. There we go. Yeah. Well, he's in. I think he's number 10 on our top 10 champions of all time.
Hmm.
When you look at it,
can't go past him.
No.
No, there is no Goodthur.
No Goodthur.
Which is a shame.
I'd like to know more about that. Maybe we'll email Essendon.
Go straight from Garney Goodrick to Andy Goodwin.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
All right. So let's move on to Collingwood, who finished first.
The mighty
Magpies.
So, the first thing we need to say, Kaz, is a return of Dick Watch.
Yes.
Dick Condon is back, everyone. Explain.
Okay. Well, it was 18 months he was out. He got a life ban for saying what? Because I don't think in the last episode I got a chance to really say it properly, but...
Your mum's a bloody whore.
Your daughter? Was it your daughter?
Your girl.
Your girl's a whore.
That's right. Your girl's a bloody whore. And so, three appeals.
To the VFL.
Yes, and comes back this season, 19th of May, against Melbourne. And there is nothing really about him in particular as an individual anymore. So, maybe... It worked.
He just seems to come back nonchalantly and just slot back into the team.
It sounds a lot like Maybe this is revealing too much of myself, but when I was 18 or 19, I got a life ban from the pub around the corner and went back 2 weeks later and it was all fine. It's just sort of that, you know, you're never coming back. Actually,
yeah, we're fine. Yeah.
Whatever. We're fine now. We're okay now.
What did you do?
He was actually a really good guy.
Nothing violent or untoward. I had a few drinks and thought it was a good idea because I had a pool table at home to take some balls because I didn't have the whole set. So I just filled up my pockets with pool balls and walked out. And somehow they noticed that my pockets are full.
It must have been a genius plan at the time. Yeah. They'll never know.
They'll never figure this out.
But also getting caught, you would have been like, you wouldn't have been to help it sort of like give like, a cheeky grin. Exactly.
How'd they get in there? Apologies.
So, Dick Condon. There we go. Now, he's in the grand final team, but that is where we have to leave Dick Watch for today.
Yeah, for now.
His future Dick Watch.
Mm. Now, round 8 against South Melbourne. You got the scores there, Kaz?
Round 8
against South Melbourne. Collingwood scored 4 goals, 26.
Oh, yes.
Against South. And won by 36 points. But there's some shocking kicking here.
Oh, I wish we could find out more about...
Charlie Panam became the first player to reach 100 games, like you said, Kaz.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Charlie Panam, ton and temper up. Yeah. There's
the article?
Article here.
Mm, that's right.
So first player, but as you said, lots of other players started reaching that as well. He just played, I think he played every Collingwood game up until that point.
He only missed 2.
Okay.
So he played 104 games up to Collingwood's... up to that game, and Collingwood have played 106 games.
Okay.
So
all the clubs have played 100 games this season.
That's right. In that article, it talks about Fitzroy as a Fitzroyvian.
There's just an interesting thing about him in that game. Sorry, yeah. I've got to go back to this. His foot passing is accurate itself. Perhaps he is a trifle fortunate in not having to wait until next year for his century of games, as he was party to a most unsavoury incident also against Fitzroy. So this was another game against Fitzroy in July.
Yeah.
Panham was unable to control his temper and responded to what was admittedly great provocation. I wonder what it was. From a particular barracker and jumped the fence to punch him. The man assaulted was urged by fellow Fitzroyvians to charge Panham with assault, but cool heads prevailed and further barracking of Panham sufficed as revenge.
Like he's the new Dick Condon.
Isn't it?
Sure.
There's a great quote here from some observers who regarded Panham as a very fine player. It was also noted that, and then in quotes, Panham exasperates every man who plays against him with his sly and spiteful tricks, yet watches the umpires so carefully that he never gets into trouble.
Nice.
Love that.
Sly dog. Fantastic. So between round 9 and 10, Collingwood took a trip to Tasmania. And they arrived back, and Kaz, you were going to talk about this, I think. They arrived back the Saturday morning to play a game against Geelong.
Yeah.
Like 3 hours before the game, they got off the boat, went to play against Geelong. But that trip was a turning point for Collingwood. Explain.
And we could say possibly the game. Well, they dominate Geelong with a new short kicking game. And quick handball and playing... to position seemed to bamboozle the Pivotonians as much as it had the Tasmanians. And, so they're really starting to dominate now, and something to do with this new short kicking.
That was 3 games into an 11-game winning streak. The only other thing I noted before the finals was against St Kilda in round 12, they burst 2 of the balls. In their 117-point win.
Is that right?
They must have kicked so many.
2.
There was... There's another interesting thing that happened in May. It came out in June, but it happened in May in round 4 when Collingwood lost to Fitzroy 22-55. Ted Rowell, who you remember kicked them, it was his first year the year before, and he kicked the most goals, but he was accused of tanking in his club's losing match against Fitzroy there. Basically, a month later, on June 28th, he reacted to weeks of innuendo and bad feeling. and offered his resignation as a player. So after only 1.5 years, he offered his resignation, but it was refused, and Raul was no doubt given some assurances about the club's feeling towards him as he went out and played a blinder against Carlton the next week that saw their team win 8-11-59 to 3-3-21.
On him, I've got he was a fast, obviously, professional runner, and played as a key forward. It was at one of the games that he was... he had a race against the actual world record holder at the time. Yeah.
At halftime?
Yeah. And he was only apparently just beaten, but he'd already played 50 minutes of football.
And then he went out and played another half.
Yeah, he went and kept playing, of course.
Unbelievable.
That just wouldn't happen these days.
Hey, no.
All right, so that gets us to the finals now. So we had the sectionals again, so they play each other twice and then they're split into two rounds. They play the sectional finals, but the amended Argus system works similarly to last year, but the team that finishes on top now has the right to challenge. So up until 1907, a controversial stipulation ruled that the minor premiers must have more wins for the season than the winners of the final, or, if level, they must have a better percentage in order to exercise the right to challenge. And so in this season, that actually comes into effect. So after the sectional games, the teams are Collingwood, Essendon, Fitzroy and Melbourne. So Essendon and Melbourne play in a final at Princess Park, in which Essendon win that game by 10 points.
Yes.
The other semi-final happens,
so dominant,
which is Collingwood versus Fitzroy. And Fitzroy upset Collingwood and actually win 64-48.
Oh, they'd be really fancying themselves.
Absolutely,
it's become a real rivalry, Collingwood and Fitzroy, hasn't it?
So a nice 16-point win there for Fitzroy, but that means Collingwood does have the right to challenge the winner of the next game. Because they finished on top of the ladder, they had a superior percentage to Essendon, even though they finished on the same amount of wins, I think, at the end of the season.
They did. They finished at the end of the season, Collingwood and...
They were level on...
No, sorry. Collingwood was clear on top.
They were ahead on... Yeah.
They won two more games than Essendon and...
Yep.
Yeah.
Way clear. So we had a preliminary final, which was Fitzroy versus Essendon again, and they have a bit of a rivalry.
So that's the first prelim.
Yeah, it is.
The new system.
In which Essendon... So the Collingwood-Fitzroy game, this Fitzroy-Essendon game, and the grand final were all played at the MCG. It was the first year the grand final was played at the MCG.
Yes. The year before it was played at Lake Oval, and the year before that, I think, was at...
Junction, maybe?
It was at Junction, yes.
Yep. Yeah. Or East Melbourne. It might have been East Melbourne football ground. But yeah, they tried to change it every year, so there was no home ground advantage. I think that was the thinking. So Fitzroy played Essendon in a prelim in 1902, and Essendon won that game 6-9-45 to Fitzroy 4-10-34. So an 11-point win in front of 26,000 people, setting up a rematch of Essendon versus Collingwood in the grand final.
Ah, fantastic.
Right. If you'd like to know the attendance stats...
Of course.
Of course, it's what I go for. The highest attendance, again, broken a record. By less, though, this time.
But
35,202, but there's an extra game of the finals as well. So you got the 26,000 who went to the prelim, and then 35,200 at the grand final, which is 5,000 more than the year before. Amazing.
And I think broke the record for all-time football attendance as well, which was, I think, a South Melbourne-Collingwood game in 1892 or something like that.
Ah.
I was reading.
Cool.
Possibly.
Maybe. I thought was that before the VFL? Yeah. So that's definitely the highest VFL
game so far. Yeah, absolutely.
Game so far.
All right. So, and the gate takings were £891.
Up about 200 from the previous year.
Yeah.
It's becoming a real thing, you know.
We should graph it.
It'd be amazing to watch in terms of percentage of population.
Imagine the Excel spreadsheet.
Because what did we say the population of Melbourne was? Three and a half million.
Yeah, well, this is Australia.
Yeah.
Sorry, Australia. So, what, 1% of Australia went to the grand final?
Yes. Considering all the others probably listening on the... No, there wasn't radio by then, but, you know, everyone's involved. I was 3,077,000 something.
Yeah.
Yeah, so a little bit more than you before.
Yes. All right, let's get stuck into this grand final, Kaz.
Okay, oh, yes. Here we go. 1982 grand final.
Welcome, Lardy. Lovely to chat to you.
Yes, lads, can you hear me okay?
We can.
What a day, I say. How good it is to be wearing the black and white.
Indeed, Lardy. Collingwood achieved its first premiership today, and you'll go down as their inaugural premiership captain.
Yes, it's an absolute honour.
You've had a great season as a club, losing only two games in the home and away season and taking that form into the finals. You must have been confident coming into them.
Yeah, we really did. And we had a long stretch of wins there and felt like we could take on anyone. However, we also lost the premiership last year to an Essendon team that really outgunned us in the final.
Could you narrow down a moment when you knew as captain you were right in the contention for the flag?
I'd really say the trip to Tasmania was, well, not a turning point, because we were playing well, but we developed a strong bond on that trip, and coming straight back into the game against Geelong, most people wrote us off. But straight off the bat, we had a great first quarter, really took control of that game, and proved we had what it takes.
Yes, we did want to ask you about this trip. It seemed you developed the new game plan down there. Now that the season's done, can you tell us all about it?
Certainly. Well, it was, you know, the whole team went down there to play some games against local teams, and well, without sounding pompous, they weren't any match for us. We were winning games quite comfortably.
Yes, we can imagine.
So Dickie Condon started playing with a shorter kick, and I think it was Teddy Rowell and Charlie Panham who started to watch him and join in. We tried out this in some games, and it really became a weapon, a way to speed up the game.
And eventually, we would see that really bring the game out of a real stop-start motion. So were you confident bringing it back into the league?
Yeah, we really were. Dickie wanted to use it and expected the teams wouldn't be ready for it at all.
And that was accurate. You won the game by 40 points, but it worked and you stuck with it. So as we stated, you had a great home and away season, sectional finals, great. You were riding an 11-game winning streak coming into the game 2 weeks ago against Fitzroy, who then got the better of you and they embarrassed you. What happened?
Yes, they really did. Credit to all of them. We hate losing to the Maroons, and in a final, it was almost devastating. They really picked apart our system, and they were far superior across most of the game. I think we only got two goals in the last quarter. It was, as he said, embarrassing.
But luckily, you had the double chance.
Yes, it was fortunate. We had done the hard yards and finished on top, so we had another crack at the ultimate success.
I bet you were all expecting Fitzroy again.
We were, yeah. They're a champion team and obviously our most serious rivals. We thought for sure we would dismantle the same they did to us.
But it wasn't the case. Essendon beat them by 11, which meant...
a rematch of the 1901 final. We had to rethink a few things.
Was one of those things a man named Albert Thurgood?
Yes.
Did you know that this was the first time the two teams had met in consecutive grand finals?
No, and it wasn't something we worried about. We wanted to win.
It was a huge build-up. The first grand final was held at the MCG. What did you think of the league's decision to hold the game there?
Honestly, best decision the league's ever made. Obviously, we'd love the game to be played at Victoria Park, but the MCG was just huge. And people cram in to make such a wonderful noise.
And the noise today must have been immense. They say there were 35,000 people in today. I think we read that it was the fourth biggest crowd ever. What was it like?
Just grand, to say the least. So much noise and cheering. My ears were still ringing from the noise.
As soon as you ran out today, there was audible disappointment, as we all learnt that your champion Monaghan was missing. Any reason why?
Yes, well, he injured himself in the game against Fitzroy, and the committee just didn't want to risk his injured knee.
Fair enough. So the game started, and after a few misses, Teddy Rowell kicked the opening goal.
Yeah, the fans whooped and whooped. From where I was on the ground, they even applauded umpire crap. Such was the excitement.
It was a goal apiece at quarter time, but Collingwood took the initiative in the second half. You seem to be able to answer all their plays?
We did. The crowd at that stage were in ecstasy. John Allen was invincible in the wing. Incol and Dick Condon were feeling it nicely to Charlie Panham. The game was being played at a tremendous pace.
At halftime, you held the lead, and we found it quite amusing that some of the crowd came onto the ground at halftime to stretch their cramped legs. So let's talk about that Albert Thurgood plan. Because up until halftime, he had kicked a goal and was playing bit parts, but he had a plan to put in place in the second half that really took him out of the game. Tell us about that.
Yes, we sent Fred Leach. His job was to run with Thurgood, shoulder to shoulder, and restrict him from causing us any damage. They had a fair duel in the half, but I think we couldn't argue that Fred won the battle.
He sure did. So that third quarter, everyone expected Essendon to come out, but it was you boys that took charge again.
It was. We were ready for them. But we had early goals to Rowell, and then George Angus scored another, and we really had some breathing space. They did score a late goal in the quarter to put some pressure on us, but on a 10-point lead, it was a buffer that we thought we could hold on to.
They did have the win in the last quarter.
Yes, and I will be honest, we were worried, but they were terribly inaccurate. But there was a turning point where we thought we'd won it. And that was when Matthew Fell intercepted a ball, passed it on to Charger. The ball finally ended up with Teddy Lockwood, and the goal he kicked really made us think we'd won it.
And then another row had the game sewn up.
It did. We ran up, eager to shake his hand. He was chuffed.
You added a few more goals, but the game was done and dusted. Collingwood were premiers, and you were the captain. What were your first feelings?
Happiness and pride. We really wanted to savour the moment.
And can you describe the scenes for us?
We were jubilant. We rushed to congratulate each other and then headed for the rooms. We carried Charger Hailwood off. In the rooms, Ern Copeland was there with a big smile.
Now tell us this, did you carry Hailwood off because you thought he was the best on ground?
He was in the mix, and Teddy Rowell as well, who kicked three for the day. But I could easily name Panham or John Allen.
And how will you remember the game, the victory, Lardie?
As a game in which individuality had to give way to combination, and it is safe to say, that every man on our team did their share.
Well, well said. Well, Lardie...
Sorry, boys. I can hear Hughie Gavin coming to offer his congratulations. Lovely to chat. Oh,
thanks, Lardie.
Oh, the mighty
Toes. What a game. So, in summary there, after that, the Collingwood men rushed to one another and to their dressing room and were met at the gate by their secretary, Mr. Copeland, with open arms. There was an excited scene in the dressing room. In the midst of it appeared the Essendon captain, H. Gavin, dripping with perspiration. He had fought for his colours like a hero and had been beaten. He jumped on a form and congratulated his victors, giving them sincere praise. The better side had won, he said, and that was all. They cheered him, and away he went to his own room to be cheered by his own men as well. Crap umpired the game magnificently, as usual. He did not use his whistle too much, but never failed to notice breaches of the rules. There was no doubt about the superiority of the winners after half-time, and no one was more ready to acknowledge it than the Essendon men themselves. And the winners took the medals presented by Mr. Alex McCracken, President of the League, to the Premier team.
McCracken.
There you go. So there's a couple of notes about the game and a few things to follow up on from what we were talking about. In the previous episode in 1901, we talked a bit about Thurgood and how he played for Essendon in 1902, and then after allegations of disloyalty, left and went to Western Australia for 3 years. Now,
that was actually Hiskins.
Oh, sorry. Was it? Yeah, no, it was. Yeah. You're absolutely right. But Thurgood was actually challenged on it as well.
Mm.
After the grand final, there were more allegations, like there were against
Hiskins
as well, about the fact that he had laid down against Collingwood in the final, which they had lost by a heavy margin for the time of 33 points.
Mm.
In disgust at this allegation, he demanded a clearance to go to the Magpies. He was refused this by Essendon and decided to retire. And then he went to Western Australia, where he was played for 3 years and then was tempted back to Essendon, but after playing 8 games in that year, was forced to retire permanently when he sustained a serious ankle injury. So
Essendon's losing Hiskins and Thurgood.
A very unfortunate way to end terms with a fantastic player.
Absolutely, honestly. And I mean, it looks like he was double-teamed or tagged all day. Yeah. So, I mean, it's not really his fault.
No, and I mean, I don't think you can blame a single person for any loss, really, can you? But it's interesting that, I mean, that happened, and then that story that I read earlier as well about the... who was it?
Oh, Panham. Rowell. Panham.
Rowell as well, the Collingwood player who was accused of tanking also. So there's a bit of anger in the crowds. These well-dressed gentlemen kicking umpires and accusing people of things. It's
and possibly some match fixing going on as well, or something shady behind the scenes.
Yes, shady behind the scenes.
There's so many people being accused of it.
All right, Kaz, you got your book out. What were you going to add?
Oh, we've reached the end with the after the grand final. I've just got a few things about some players.
Okay.
What have we got? Jack. Well, obviously Thurgood retires. One thing is he becomes a bookmaker. In 1927, he runs a horse called Amazonia, which is third in the Melbourne Cup. There you go. And we said he became team of the century. Another Essendon player, Kinnear, serves as mayor of Essendon. Jack McKenzie, who came from Brunswick Football Club, was in this grand final team. And he later becomes captain coach. So he's obviously thereabouts. And he's a ruckman that kicks 90 goals.
Wow.
Unbelievable.
This is like an episode of a TV or a movie. Where it's like, what happens to them after the end of the show?
Yeah.
I've got a bit of a comment, actually.
With the still of their face and then underneath. Yeah. I like that.
A couple of Collingwood players. There's a guy called Bob Rush who coined the phrase, which is on their motto. Now, this is probably not how you say it, but it's like Floreat Pica.
As the magpie flies or something like that.
Yeah, may the magpies prosper.
May the magpies prosper.
Nice, he coined that phrase. He was thereabouts. And George and Teddy were some twins or something related to this game. And they were the first twins to play VFL or something. I know we had lots of other famous twins. But that was
famous brothers, but not
twins, yeah.
They're actual
not
twins.
Not twins at this stage, yeah. Mm.
Obviously some famous twins that have played. What are the Phoebe brothers? Were they twins? They were Rush brothers, weren't they? Never mind. there we go. There's some stuff about some Collingwood players.
Good. All right. Well, let's wrap this season up. So, Commonwealth champion of the Commonwealth.
Champion of
Ted Rowell of Collingwood.
That's right.
Leading goal kickers.
Leading goal kickers again. Charlie Baker.
Charlie Baker for the season proper, but for the season. I don't know.
Is tricky.
Yeah, it is tricky because not all teams played finals. So, it was Charlie Baker kicked the most for the season, but when you add in the.
The finals,
which is what they seem to have done in this book.
In the other, yeah.
So it was actually Ted Rowell and Albert Thurgood who kicked 33.
Yeah, so but Collingwood and Essendon who played the most games.
Yeah, but Essendon played an extra 3 games, Collingwood an extra 2 games.
All right, well, what about you guys, your opinion about the new final system, the amended Argus system? It's hard to say because this season worked out.
Do you know what, though? I don't like the idea that you can challenge. I think you've got to be the best team on the day. You've got to win to get there. You can't just be like, oh, well, I've been pretty good all year.
But you should be rewarded for finishing on top, though.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Once they work out the
second chance.
Final four, top two teams get a double chance. I think that...
But I completely agree.
Yeah.
But I think it can't just be you can just shoot yourself straight into the grand final.
No.
It's ridiculous. No. So that's obviously... I know, well, the Argus system will get... changed a couple more times.
Three different things in 3 years has been.
And then I think it gets changed again in about the early 20s as well, and they finally and come the up with something in about the 20s in about 27.
But then they change it back to the original, like the original round robin series in 1925.
I mean, why not? Keep people guessing. Yeah. I say.
Make some more money.
Yeah,
more finals.
Get more people,
money.
More attendance.
The good old days.
So highest score still held by Geelong. The wooden spoon again was won by St Kilda.
But at least they got a couple of records this year. So they did do all right.
Did they?
Not records you want, but no. They got a couple.
And flag tallies are Essendon 2, Fitzroy 2, Collingwood 1, and Melbourne 1.
Mm-hmm. Solid effort.
Solid effort.
So out of the 8 teams, 4 now have premierships.
Yep. 8, so 4 in 6 seasons. That's pretty good.
It's not bad, is it? Reasonably even.
You'd be happy with that. All right, so that wraps up our show. Kaz, anything special to finish with?
Sorry, guys. I know you've been hanging. Look, it's the New Year's episode. Maybe cut me some slack. And when the New Year really kicks in, we'll have some gems.
Still suffering from a bit of a champagne hangover.
Absolutely.
There's your homework then, Kaz, man.
Oh, thanks. And thank you, guys.
Thanks for listening.
Amazing. Thank you. See you next time.
Bye-bye.
Hooroo.
See ya.
To find out more about the Kick to Kick team and the sources we use, visit our website, www.kicktokickpodcast.com. You can contact us via email at kicktokickpodcast@gmail.com or find us on Twitter and Instagram under @kicktokickpod. Thanks so much for listening.